So I want to share with you a little thought experiment that I did. It's I'll tell with you in just a little bit. I'll share with you the incident that caused this to come to my mind. But I was thinking about something and I thought, hey, I wonder what ChatGPT thinks about this. So that's how my thought experiment came about, is I entered something in ChatGPT just to see, and I was really surprised at how good the answer was from ChatGPT. So what I entered in is I asked ChatGPT, can you give me a list of companies that are built on making a profit versus companies that are built on providing customer service? So here's the response I got from ChatGPT. It said, certainly. Here are examples of businesses that are often associated prior toward prioritizing customer service and those that are known for their focus on making a profit. So I'm going to start by going over the businesses that ChatGPT, he, she, it, I have no idea, gave to me. The first one was Zappos. Zappos is renowned for exceptional customer service. Zappos prioritizes customer service above all else. So I can tell you an interesting story about Zappos. One thing about Zappos is that their phone customer service representatives are taught to keep people on the phone as long as possible. Most places teach their people to get people off the phone because their mentality is we've got to get them off the phone so we can get to the next customer so that we can just move quickly and make money, because that's the money-making machine. And Zappos, being customer service driven, is actually opposite of that. Zappos, like I said, they try to keep people on the phone. The idea is to keep them on the phone as long as possible, because if you do that, by the time the person gets off the phone, they never feel shortchanged. And they often find at Zappos how amazing it is that people will, when they stay on the phone, they may end up making an additional purchase. They might end up referring somebody to them. They end up getting more business by giving good customer service. And so what you'll notice about Zappos, and you'll notice about all of the companies that I'm about to mention on the customer service side, is that none of them are broke. None of them fail to make money. And I think sometimes that's the fear, is that the reason people become profit driven is because they are perhaps driven by the fear of not paying their bills initially. And then it kind of turns into, well, I have a lifestyle to maintain. And so now I have a fear of not maintaining my lifestyle. And so profit driven is often stands contrary to customer service, because people are thinking that I've got to make money, I've got to make money, I've got to make money. And that's what drives them. And they think that customer service is not going to be as inclined to make money. But again, all of these customer service businesses make really good money by focusing on customer service. So to prove that point, number two on the list that ChatGPT gave me was the Ritz-Carlton. This luxury hotel chain is famous for its high standards of customer service and personalized experiences. I've talked before about Horst Schulze, who ran Ritz-Carlton for many, many, many years. Wrote a book on customer service. If you want to know about customer service, he's the man. He's the one who knows it all. So you look at Horst Schulze, and anything that he's written. I've read his stuff, and it's very enjoyable. He's famous for saying, or for telling his people, "We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen." And one of the things that he always did for new hires is the new hire training. He always showed up because it was never beneath him to be there. So he always showed up, demonstrating customer service. And it did not matter if the person was at the top that they hired or the person was at the bottom. They all were treated the same. They all were trained the same. And really, the crazy thing that he did, or everybody thought it was crazy, was everybody had the same power. So he told everybody, even if you were a dishwasher, or a server, like, it doesn't matter what you do. If you have an opportunity to make the customer's experience better, you have the authority to do whatever it takes to make the customer's experience better. And so that was how he ran it. And so that's why at the Ritz-Carlton, if you have a problem, you don't have to find the right person. You just have to find any person who works there, and any of them can do it, and they can make it better. So that was part of his prioritizing of customer service, is that we want to make things as good as we can. And if somebody needed had a special request, they would do anything within their power to try to make it to make that for them, knowing that when people have a very special experience, that special experience is what drives them to have loyalty towards the brand, to want the brand. In fact, I talked to somebody who stayed at Ritz-Carlton, and they said the problem with Ritz-Carlton is that once you stay at Ritz-Carlton, you really don't want to stay anywhere else because the experience is so great that nothing else even comes close to comparing to that. And so that is the loyalty you get from customer service. And it's one of the things that as doctors, as chiropractors, as constant doctors, we want loyalty. We want our patients to refer all of their friends and family and everybody else they know who needs help. And one of the ways you inspire that kind of loyalty is by giving them a very personalized, special experience and making it something that they remember so that they don't really want anything else. It's that sort of Ritz-Carlton type experience. Number three on the list is Nordstrom. Nordstrom's known for its outstanding customer service. Nordstrom has a reputation for going above and beyond to meet customer needs. So here's a little Nordstrom story. If you go to Nordstrom and buy a pair of shoes, and then later those shoes start to fall apart, heel starts to come off, something like that, and you take it back to Nordstrom, they will not repair your shoes. They will replace your shoes. They will take those shoes and they will bring you a brand new pair because that's the quality you're getting. So even though you pay more for Nordstrom's, you're almost essentially buying it with insurance, and the insurance is built into the price. And so a lot of people who are loyal to Nordstrom's, that's how they see it, is that I buy from Nordstrom's because I'm buying my clothes, my expensive, nice clothes, with a guarantee that if they break, I can take them back and I will get new ones. And so they also inspire brand loyalty because it's an expected experience. It's not a, it doesn't happen by chance. It doesn't happen because you got lucky and got just the right person. They have a customer service system built into their process so that if you have a problem and you go in, it does not matter who you see, they will follow the system. And so that's the next step of good customer service, is that customer service comes from building systems that create customer service. And so I was thinking the other day that within a business, almost anything's possible. You can do almost anything. You just have to build a system to make it happen. So if you find that where you live, customers need something unique in one area or another, if it keeps happening over and over, then you probably need to provide it regularly. And if you need to provide it regularly, then you need to have a system for how to do that. And I've mentioned before, when I first started practice, I systematized everything. I had a system for how I shot my x-rays. I had a system for everything, because that creates consistency. And one of the things I learned, and I guess I learned this from my mom, actually, when she was a high school teacher, she used to tell me that the thing that kids need more than anything else is consistency. She said, she said most of them have parents who have good days and bad days. And so when they get up in the morning, they don't know if their parent's going to have a good day or a bad day. And people who have wild mood fluctuations like that make for very neurotic children most of the time, because they don't know what to expect. And as a teacher, she said, if they're coming to see me every day and I can provide them with consistency, that allows them to put their guard down. And as they put their guard down, then I have an opportunity to actually teach them. And it's very difficult to teach them if they're on guard and their guard is up, because they don't know what kind of a day it's going to be or what kind of a mood I'm going to be in or anything like that. And so she said, the greatest thing you can provide is consistency. Well, as I got older, I realized that's not just for children. That's for everybody. Everybody needs consistency. That when, especially when you're running a business, when people know that it doesn't matter what day of the week it is, or it doesn't matter what time of day it is, that when they come in, it's going to be what they expect. It's that, I think by consistency, what I mean is expectability. I can come in and I know what to expect. And that's one of the things that helps with the Gonstead system, is that people do know what to expect. They come in, they put on a gown, they know we're going to scope them. They know we're going to palpate them. You know, we're going to take a look at their x-rays. They know we're going to give them adjustment. And the hardest part of that is to keep your adjustments consistent, because we all know that we don't all have good adjusting days all the time. There's some days when you're like, man, I'm not hitting it. And so that's one of the hardest parts, is trying to keep that part consistent. And so it's something to work on. But I think the lesson we can learn from Nordstrom's is the lesson in consistency, where everything we do is predictable to the patient, and they know what to expect from that. It's kind of like another business that's not on this list, but I'll mention them because they are about customer service, is Disneyland. Like, if I went to Disneyland and all of a sudden the plants weren't trimmed and there was trash all over the street, I could tell the paint had worn down and nobody had repainted it, you'd kind of be like, what happened? The whole reason I come here is because I know what to expect. I know that it's going to be this escapist environment. And I know that whole environment, because that's why I've always said that for me, I prefer Disneyland over the other amusement parks. And the number one reason why is simply the ambiance. It's the environment. Nobody else creates an environment like that. And they may not be my favorite rides. They may not be the best rides or whatever. I like most of the rides, but there's a time when you're like, I want real roller coasters. But it doesn't matter. If given a choice, I will still choose Disneyland because the environment. And so environment is a key part of that as well, that consistency of environment. So that's what Disneyland does. They've taken the Nordstrom's consistency and they've applied it to the environment. So that when you walk around Disneyland, you don't see trash all over the place. And you don't see things that have been unkept. You see a place that's very well manicured. And obviously people have put a lot of work into making sure it looks the same day after day after day after day, so that you're never going to go and be like, I guess Disneyland's having an off day. They don't have an off day. It's always the same. And that's because they have systems built in to keep it that way. Okay, number four on this list of customer service. And now we get into the zone you may or may not agree with. But in fact, I don't agree with the last one, but I'll tell you a little bit about that in a second. Number four is Amazon. It says, while it's a massive corporation, Amazon built its empire on providing excellent customer service, including fast delivery and easy returns. So what you learn from Amazon is the lesson that in customer service, you don't have to be excellent at everything, but you have to be excellent at something. And so with Amazon, they've chosen their targets. They chose fast delivery and easy returns. And I will tell you that there are many, many times that my wife is wanting to get something. She thinks it'll solve a problem that we have, but she's not sure if it will. So instead of going down the street and buying it from Walmart or someplace like that where she could have it today, she'll order it on Amazon, knowing that if it doesn't work, it's so easy to send back, because she could just, honestly, she just take it to Kohl's and give it to them and they'll take it back. And she goes to Kohl's all the time anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So it's like, it's so easy to return. And so when you pick these targets that are obstacles for people, because before Amazon, a lot of places would give you hassle over returns. And a lot of them have gotten better now because they had to. Amazon forced them to be better at what they do because they do it well. And so that's the lesson we can learn from Amazon, is that even if you can't be good at everything, pick something unique that you can be over the top good at, and you will attract people based on that niche of being good at that one thing. And then the last one is Southwest Airlines. Recognized for its friendly and helpful staff, Southwest Airlines emphasizes customer satisfaction and loyalty. This one I do kind of disagree with, but here's the reason why. As somebody who flies on Southwest Airlines at least once every other week. I fly every other week. So I've spent a lot of time on Southwest Airlines. I can tell you that they have the worst loyalty program in the airline business. I'm sorry to say that, but they do. I've flown a lot over the years. I used to fly a lot with Alaska Airlines when I lived up in Washington, and they were my absolute favorite, because it took very little time at all. In fact, I was almost instantly in an upgrade tier. Even though people could outrate me, I was almost instantly in an upgrade tier with them, so that if I chose my flights well, so that I found low travel times, I could get upgraded to first class almost instantly. If I could just find a flight that had room on it for me to be in first class, they would instantly bump me. And I had hardly even flown with them at all, but because I was in their loyalty program, I could get bumped. So I love them. Southwest, on the other hand, they don't even have that option. So there's no bumping to first class. They'd have to make you the pilot or something. There's no first class. I don't particularly like the cattle call. I don't like the fact that I have a lot of early morning flights. So that means that if I have to get up at 5 a.m. to get a flight, then the morning before, I've got to get up at 5 a.m. so I can get my boarding pass, so I can get my place in line. I don't like that. So you go, okay, well, that's why you're on the loyalty program, so that you can get up into the A section, not have to do that. Right. The thing is, do you know how much you have to fly to get there? So I've been flying on Southwest every other week this entire year, and I'm not quite halfway to that status which is kind of crazy. That's a really high bar considering how low the benefit is. And other than getting to get on the plane earlier, there is no other benefit. And so it's kind of funny to me because that's generally how most airlines show their appreciation to their customers who fly with them the most is through that. So for me, I don't find their flight attendants to be that much nicer than anybody else's flight attendants. A lot of the flights I take are short. They don't even do drink service. So I don't find the amenities to be that great. If they really wanted to, I don't know, they really wanted to inspire more loyalty, I think having a better frequent flyer program would be ideal. But here's the thing that I get from Southwest Airlines is that they're an interesting business to me because what they've done is they've put their employees above even their customers. And if you read about them, you'll find that they'll state that this is true. So I don't think this is in any way an insult. I think that maybe ChatGPT just kind of missed the point of Southwest Airlines. But what Southwest Airlines did, and the lesson we can learn from this, is Southwest Airlines said, if we treat our employees like royalty, if we treat them really, really well, then that good will and that good spirit will flow down to our customers. And so rather than trying to interact directly with their customers and give their customers perks and loyalty to them, they try to establish that with their employees so that their employees will love them, their employees want to work for them, their employees don't want to go anywhere else, their employees are happy to go to work. And then that flows down and gives a good customer experience. That was kind of the Southwest Airlines experiment. And I think in some ways it's worked. And yet, if you ask me, why do I fly them so much if I don't really like them? The reason why is because they're the only ones that I can get a nonstop flight at the time that I need, as frequently as I need, between the two airports that I need. Otherwise, I'm flying all over the West Coast trying to get between two fairly close cities. So that's another perk is that you want customers to rely on you. You gotta fly a lot. And so a lot of the other ones, when I've tried to do other airlines, they just don't fly enough. There's nothing available. So there's nothing to be loyal about because you can't fly. So those are, I think, five interesting businesses that give you a perspective on customer service, whether it's Zappos and customer satisfaction, making sure that people are happy with their end product, that the experience was good. Zappos is a good experience. Ritz-Carlton is also a good experience. It's customer service and even a personalized experience unique to your person, which I do think is important because with the patients we see, no two patients are alike. They're all a little bit different. And a lot of times we want to make a system where we make all the patients the same and go, oh, this is a this case, or this is a that case, rather than seeing it as, no, this is an individual. And they need a unique thing for them. It's more unique than systems want to allow. Whether it's Nordstrom's going above and beyond to meet the customer's needs, whether it's Amazon and you've got a very fine area where you're like, I'm going to specialize in this one thing really, really well, or it's Southwest Airlines where you're trying to create loyalty through predictable systems. So I think those are five businesses that give us an interesting perspective of what it means to be involved in customer service. I just wanted to give you a quick reminder that this weekend, April 6th and 7th, I'll be doing a training in Nashville, Tennessee with Dr. Lars Gunner. It's entitled Between the Lines, and we're going to be talking about X-ray analysis and how to go over some of that stuff. But it'll also include some technique adjusting, some mindset stuff for how you handle patients in practice. And so I'm including the link in the bio. And if you sign up, don't forget to include the code 1505, 1505. Now, when we get to these businesses that ChatGPT said were built on making a profit, it immediately struck me that I was looking at businesses that were very impersonal. And I thought, wow, I don't know what I thought. I guess I thought that it was just going to show me some businesses that maybe it was like, hey, you could do this. But I saw these businesses and I was like, these are businesses most people want to run from. So let me start going through some of these businesses built for making a profit. I'll talk about what I think they're each doing wrong so that if you are a business built on making profit and that is your driving force, because I definitely see that within Gonzo world, there are people who are driven by profit. There are people driven by customer service. And they both exist. And I'm not going to say either one's right or wrong. But one thing I have noticed that's come to my mind is that businesses built on profit almost always try to masquerade as businesses that care about customer service. And businesses that are built on customer service never try to masquerade as businesses that are built on profit. Even though customer services businesses do make profit, and even though profit-based businesses often fail to provide customer service. So there's this weird dynamic that happens that I think that's part of what creates just general distrust for the population. And so I think if you're a business built on business, I don't think there's any harm in just accepting that fact and just being what you are. But let's go through some of these. So business is built on making a profit. First, investment banks. Well, that's a place you really want to go. Companies like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan are primarily focused on generating profits through financial services and investments. Now they have an even worse reputation because now they're doing zero reserve fractional banking. So they're actually lending out more money than they possess, when in the past they always had to keep money on hand and they could only lend out a portion of what they had on hand. Now they're lending out more than they even have, which is a disaster. And everybody knows that if that blows up in their face, who's going to pay for it? Their customers. So these are very impersonal, almost predatory institutions at this point in time. My daughter was doing a presentation for school, and she did a presentation on famous quotes by founding fathers. And one of my favorite ones that I didn't even know was in there is there was one by Thomas Jefferson, and he said, "I feel that the threat of the banks is a more standing or pressing threat to the United States than any standing army." And I thought, wow, how timely is that? Because here, while we have war all over the world and people are worried about stuff, Thomas Jefferson is still, he had the same thing in his day. And he was like, nope, I think the banks are more dangerous than that. So I think that's kind of interesting. Number two, fast food chains. Many fast food chains prioritize efficiency and cost effectiveness to maximize profits, often at the expense of customer service. So this is actually how this whole conversation began for me. I was at a Taco Bell. Don't judge me. I needed cheese. I needed cheese in my life. Anyway, I was at Taco Bell, and as I'm sitting there, there's a conversation happening at a booth next to me, and it's clearly one of the higher up managers for Taco Bell with two of the top employees in that particular restaurant. And obviously these employees are not, I can tell by their faces, they're not very happy with him. And this guy, who I think obviously thinks that he's a very slick talking people person, but he's not, he's pretty transparent, is basically giving them a bit of a tongue lashing because what they were trying to exhibit customer service in their Taco Bell, but he perceived that as being slow. You're just being slow and we need to be faster, because his perception was, any, if we're not making the profits we want to make, it's because we're too slow. If we just go faster, then we'll have the profits, not realizing that to have the profits, people have to walk in the door. And so if you are fast and efficient and people don't walk in the door, you're really just sitting around twiddling your thumbs and you're actually making a start and stop. Anyway, I'm listening to this conversation and I'm thinking, this is really bizarre. And so that it was that conversation that got me thinking, what's a good delineation between companies that work for profit and ones that work for customer service? Because here I could see a guy who was actually anti-customer service. I don't know that he knew that he was anti-customer service, but he clearly was, because he just wanted to go faster, make more profit. And I think that that's the general mentality of businesses that are trying to make a profit, is they're like, we need to go faster, 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 faster. So they set time limits on things. Your interaction can only be this long because we got to get you, that person, done and get to the next one, because they've done the math and it's all about the numbers. And if each person has this dollar sign over their head, then if we can see enough of those people, then we can get enough of those dollar signs. And now we're in that little mode. And so that's basically how they think. And I know without naming names, but you'll know what I'm talking about. When you have franchises coming into chiropractic franchising looks the same way. It's about numbers, dollars on heads, move people through. It's not about customer service or care or quality, because that is the way that mode works. And so that's not an insult. That's just an identification that's how that works. I think if you really wanted to have a customer service brand in chiropractic, it would probably have to be a chain and not a franchise. But that's just my opinion. Maybe somebody will prove me wrong. Number three. Oh, this is a great one. We all love this one. Pharmaceutical companies. While they provide essential medications, it says, pharmaceutical companies are ultimately profit-driven entities that focus on maximizing revenue. Well, when we see what they do, when you see that pharmaceutical companies build death from their product into their business plan, that most of these things are acceptable losses. They don't see it as a problem. It's an acceptable loss. When people dying is an acceptable loss, you know your business is driven around profit and not about customer service, because Nordstrom's and Zappos and Amazon, well, they're not killing anybody. So that's a good thing. But that's a pretty low bar to get over, is that, well, our business isn't killing anybody. And yet the pharmaceutical industry can't even get over that bar. In fact, I was recently listening to a podcast with Jordan Peterson and somebody else that I can't remember, but they were talking about this, and they were talking about iatrogenic death. And Jordan Peterson made the comment that to be such a profit-driven industry and be the third to fourth leading cause of death. And as he pointed out, he said, since COVID, we don't even know where iatrogenic death comes in, because at this point, it's very difficult to even know who is damaged by what. So it's actually hard to calculate. So we have them at three or four just based on what we know happened. Not knowing could put them all the way at the top. And so he said, it's very destructive when you've got an industry that's supposed to be making people healthy, and yet they're the biggest cause of death. So that's what you get with profit driven, is that you go, well, we don't really care. As long as the money keeps rolling in, we don't really care. And I think that that's kind of the general theme of what profit driven businesses are known for, is apathy. They don't care. It's all the profit becomes so big to them that they just don't care about the consequences. So then we get number four, oil and gas companies. These companies are primarily focused on extracting and selling natural resources to generate profits for shareholders. And one of the problems I have with these companies is I'm not against oil or gas, but a lot of times when there's a choice between doing it in a way that's environmentally friendly and a way that's not environmentally friendly, how do they make the decision? They make the decision based on profit, which means that they usually end up doing the thing that's destructive to the environment. And so they don't want to spend their money doing their job better, because they figure people need our product so bad, who cares? They're going to buy it anyway. It doesn't matter if we're destroying large chunks of the earth. And so that kind of mentality to me is troublesome, because it's also the mentality that says, well, by the time it's a huge problem, I won't be here anymore. Yeah, but your kids will. You don't care about them, but they don't. We don't care. We don't care what happens to the environment, just as long as we get what we want and we get it now. And I would say that that stems all the way back to J.D. Rockefeller, because that was his attitude. So it's almost like a culture within the industry that he started, and it's just kind of maintained since then. So then there's that one. And then the last one is big box retailers. Large retail chains like Walmart and Target focus on maximizing sales and profits through economies of scale and cost-cutting measures. Apparently, one of their biggest cost-cutting measures is to not have employees anymore. I think everybody's noticed that. I had the misfortune of going to Walmart about that long ago, and I feel my wife needed something. I don't know, and I could only get it at Walmart. So I had to go get it, and I look, and there's no checkers. And I was like, great, I'm going to do self-checkout. So I go to self-checkout. They've got it roped off. I'm like, how are you supposed to leave this place? Is this like, it's like Hotel California. You can come in, but you can never leave. And I was like, how am I going to get out of this thing? And so it took me forever. I actually found one checker way over on the edge. And I think the only reason they weren't busy is because nobody could even see them. And so there's just people wandering around with carts full of stuff. Like, how do I get out of this place? I would say that that is not a business that's highly focused on customer service, because it also makes me wonder. I told my wife, I said, why don't they just change the front of the store? They've got like 20 checkout counters and they never have any of them open. Why don't they just rip them out and like put in more stuff, or just make it all self-checkout? Or I don't even know what they do. Do something. Put in a robot to check me out. I don't even care. But why do you have all this stuff in the front that you're never, ever going to use? But that's what you see with profit-driven, is that any place we can cut money, we can cut things to our customers, we're going to cut. And so that makes for a worse and worse customer experience. And so I remember years ago, going to Walmart was not so bad. In fact, it was almost easy. You went to Walmart, they had everything. You had different brands of the same thing. You grab what you want. You get to the front, there were a ton of checkout people. You check out, you leave, piece of cake. And they slowly transitioned to make it one of the most horrible experiences in the world. And I don't think that they even care that they made it horrible. So I don't think they even take that as an insult. They don't care that it's horrible, because as they pushed out mom and pop stores, they became the only option left. And that's more of the mentality. And so I think you see that with profit driven as well, is that the goal is to try to eliminate the competition and then drift to the lowest common denominator because there's no longer anybody making you be better. And if you don't have to be better, you're not going to be better. And I think that that's a mentality that is driven in that direction, because there are people who are like, I want to be the best me I can be, and I'm going to do that no matter what. And then there's other people who will not get better unless there's people around them who are driving them and forcing them to get better. And as soon as they don't have to be better, they're not going to be better. They're going to drift to the lowest common denominator. So I think that's a danger to look out for and watch out for as well, on that side. Just to look in the mirror and look at yourself and be like, who am I? Am I somebody who drives myself? Do I have that spark plug? Or am I somebody who has to be driven by others? And if you need to be driven by others, that's okay. Recognize that, but make sure that you surround yourself with good others, with good people who are doing good things, because at that point, the people around you who are driving you, they're the ones who are going to make you or break you. They're the ones who are going to determine the kind of person you become and the way you interact with people. So definitely something to be mindful of. So I hope this has at least been somewhat beneficial. It was to me. I kind of enjoyed reading through all these and thinking about some of these things that were in regard to this. And so I think it's good to take a mindset and look at your business and say, well, what am I? Am I profit driven or am I customer service driven? And then more importantly, which one do I want to be? And if I am what I want to be, then awesome, job well done. And if you're not, you can begin to understand steps that need to be taken to move from one towards the other and to make that transition over. So I hope that helps to give an idea of how that works and really who you want to be. Hey, I just wanted to quickly let you know that I've been working on the subscription area, and I've been adding in some technique tutorials, things that I think could be of benefit to you. And if there's anything else, feel free to reach out to me and let me know what you think would be great to go in there. But I'm working on that section, trying to make it a little bit better, trying to build it up as a resource that you can go back to and revisit over and over, and use it to help build your skills and your knowledge base of the technique system and what we do.